Blog Talk Radio.
You have tuned in to the Brain Injury Radio Network, with shows 7 nights a week. You can find the network at braininjuryradio.com or look up Brain Injury Radio Network on Facebook.
Another Fork in the Road with your host, Donna O'Donnell Fugerski.
Hi, welcome to the Brain Injury Radio Network on blogtalkradio.com. My name is Donna O'Donnell Fugerski, and I am your host on my show, Another Fork in the Road. My show airs on the first and third Sundays of every month at 5:30 p.m. Pacific Time. And we're heard all over the world, so just make your time conversions and you can tune in live. Or you can always just listen to the archived version that'll be on my blog, and I will let you know where that is. And that you can do it anytime at your convenience. So Another Fork in the Road is for anyone with a brain injury, anyone who is caring for a brain injured person, or anyone with any interest in learning more about brain injury. Brain injury is not discriminating. It can happen to anyone, anytime, and anywhere. And believe me, it does over and over and over again every day. The Brain Trauma Foundation states that there are more than 5 million people in the United States living with some form of brain injury. But, you know, most folks don't even know about it. At least I never did. I didn't know about it until it came to live on my doorstep. On Another Fork in the Road, I try to raise awareness of brain injury and to help folks to understand what brain injury survivors go through and what their caregivers go through, what they experience. On the first Sunday, actually I'm going to say the third Sunday, which is now, of each month, I interview brain injury survivors or caregivers to see how they traverse their world of brain injury. I host therapists, medical professionals, and authors to gain insight into what they offer survivors. And on each first Sunday of the month, I host a discussion panel to examine pertinent topics related to brain injury, such as depression, neural fatigue, anger, or various symptoms of brain injury. Today is the third Sunday of May, and technically I should be having a guest, which I did for a while, but because of extenuating circumstances, he had to cancel. So we will reschedule Bill Gassiamos from Down Under in Australia at some point. We had time conflicts because of such a great time difference in our zones. But we will get Bill on it sometime. So what we're going to hear tonight is what I'm calling a free-for-all. I've never done this before, and I'm really excited about trying it. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. There will be at least two panelists and perhaps the third one coming on a little later as soon as her schedule allows. And we're just going to be talking about whatever comes up. You know, so there are so many topics in brain injury, and we've covered so many of them, but you can never exhaust them. There's just so much to learn and to say about it. So we're going to just kind of roll with it tonight, and I hope you'll roll with us. So for those of you who are new to my show, here's just a little snippet about me. I came on the brain injury scene in 2005. When my husband David had a brain injury. And you can learn more about that on my blog. And this is where I always tell you, get a pencil and paper, have it nearby so you can jot down information that you might want to look up or check on later. Because I do throw out URLs for different websites that you might be interested in. And boy, is it hard to remember those big long addresses. So the first thing I'm going to say is learn more about me on my blog at survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. That's all one word in all lowercase. And I shared David's and my story in 4 episodes on this very show in August 14, 2014. Wow, it sounds like years ago. It is years ago. Sounds like ancient times. And the last of which was in November of 2014, and that one featured a discussion with David. So on the first 4 shows, I shared my story, our story, David's and my story, to let the world know who they're listening to here on Another Fork in the Road. And then in November, David came on, and he gave his perspective. So that's really interesting to get to hear some of that. So you can, again, go to SurvivingTraumaticBrainInjury.com to listen to On the Air Show Menu. Actually, you're going to listen to shows that are on the air show menu. So if you go to that site and click in the right sidebar, the search bar, On the Air Show Menu, you will find about 166 shows that have been recorded already and archived for you. So just scroll down to that 2014 dates or put in whosever name you're looking for, and voila, you'll get the information at your fingertips just like that. So I also interviewed David on my April 19, 2020 show for his perspective on his brain injury after, at that time it was 15 years, and now we're past 17 years. Because he's a retired professor of microbiology, I wanted his understanding. I wanted him to share his understanding of the COVID-19 pandemic, which he did because he was able to read the scientific papers and then translate them into real-world talk, so we could understand what the scientists were discussing and researching and learning about. So you can find my archive shows, as I just said. I blog SurvivingTraumaticBrainInjury.com. Just click on the air show menu and under the category section on the right sidebar, and it's real easy. If you want to find out about David, just type David Figurski. If you want to find out about any of my guests, just type their names, and you're going to be meeting 2 and possibly 3 guests tonight. So you can also read our complete story in my book, Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver's Tale, which was published by Right Life Publishing, and it was released in 2018. And you can find Prisoners, as I fondly call it, as an ebook and as a print book, but you can also find it as an audiobook. And I had the privilege of being the reader for that book, so you're going to hear it right from the horse's mouth. Well, you know what I mean. So go to my website, DonnaFigurski.com, to learn more about me. And, you know, at that site, you can find the whole cast of characters that are in the book. So that's always fun. You can see the actual people that I'm writing about. And it's interesting. You'll see my daughter and my son and my granddaughters and my cousins and my friends, and it'd be really kind of fun. So I hope that you're going to visit the shows of the other hosts on Brain Injury Radio. There are shows every night between 7 and 10 p.m. Pacific time. And you can also tune in at 5:30 p.m. Pacific time on the weekend nights, so to listen to your favorite shows then. So Brain Injury Radio airs across the United States in every state and in 36 countries. So now sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. So tonight, like I said, we're going to have a free-for-all. We're going to just talk about whatever comes up. And my guests tonight are Deb Brandon and Karina Seda. Deb and Karina both have been guests on my show, so you can get their whole story simply by going to that search box on my SurvivingTraumaticBrainInjury.com and typing their name in. And you'll get all of the shows that they were in or any interviews they've done, any information at all. So it's always fun to do that. So at that point, at this point, I should say, I usually introduce my guests, but what I'm going to do tonight is let them tell you who they are and talk a little bit about, you know, how they got into this position of being in this community of brain injury. So, Deb, why don't you start? Welcome. I should
say
welcome.
I'm Deb.
Hi.
Let's see. So I have clusters of malformed blood vessels in my brain. They're thin-walled, and they can bleed. Well, 2 of them bled, and they wreaked havoc on my life. And the only known treatment for these things, they're called cavernous angiomas, the only known treatment to prevent future bleeds is to remove them surgically. So I ended up having, well, I had bleeds, I ended up having three surgeries. And and after that, it was a matter of rebuilding myself and my life. And the thing with severe brain injury, you don't fully recover at any point. But a lot of people at first think in terms of, oh, they want to recover who they were before the injury. I believe that in most cases, that's not what happens. In my particular case, it was a big struggle. My life is harder than it was. But now, 15 years later, I am in a much better place. I believe that the new Deb is an improvement on the old Deb. I'm a much more authentic version of myself. I'm more compassionate. I'm a better person. I live a fuller life. And I'm much more comfortable in my own skin than I used to be. So life is good. And I met Donna through the brain injury community. I wrote my memoir, but my brain had other ideas. And Donna contacted me and asked me if I'd be willing to be interviewed on her show. And we've actually become friends. And now we're working on a project together, co-authoring a book.
And that is terrific. And we'll talk a little bit about that, too. Let me just get into Karina so we get her into the show and find out a bit about her. And then I already have some questions for you, Deb, from what you just said. So go ahead, Karina. Welcome.
Amazing. Thank you, Donna, to be able to be here with you both. It is amazing. And what a great opportunity we have today to talk about, like, free, right, whatever comes up. One of the things that came to my mind when we were sharing, Donna, about, you know, in 2005, and that reminds me that yesterday it was my 15th year anniversary from my stroke. So I was like, yesterday, and some things we don't even think about when we have several years already in this journey. So I just realized that basically to share with you all yesterday, that May 14, 2008, I had my hemorrhagic stroke. But my journey started a little bit earlier. When I was 12 years old, the doctors discovered the aneurysm condition. So since then, my journey started to get more involucrated on this journey on the community of people, right, trying to manage, right, and trying different to manage such conditions. From my 12 until my 15, everything was fine. I was, you know, normal child, doing all my activities at school, and that was sports, that was my life. Back then, when I had my stroke, pretty much, I lost all movement of the left side of my body. But for the glory of God, I have my life. I have been able to go finish college, obtaining my BA, having a career, being able to try to do everything. A normal life after a stroke.
Wow. Well, it's a new normal kind of life after stroke, because that's probably, your life is quite different from what it could have been had you not had your stroke. But, you know, that's something really important, though, is that we have to accept the fact that you, you know, ex- I guess not, you're grieving or accepting it, but not giving up. That's it. You're accepting what's your life as it is. Because, you know, when you think about it, nobody is dealt the perfect hand. Everybody has gets that, that I don't know, the joker sometimes, you know, in your hand, and you have to deal with it, you know, pass it off to somebody else or something, but you have to deal with it. And so I think that's both of you actually have such a good attitude about living with your brain injuries, and that's why I really enjoy having you on the show, because I think that's so important for other people to hear, because it's so easy when you have a brain injury and you've got so many afflictions and so many disabilities and life has been kind of, the rug's been torn out from under you and you've got to start all over again, learn to walk, talk, or whatever. It's difficult, you know, and a lot of people just want to give up. But if you give up, you're giving up on life, you know, and you only get one of those, no matter what it is. Whether it happens to be the millionaire up there that has everything, or the person who doesn't have anything but is happy too, you know, you have to kind of make your own path, I guess. And that's one of the things that happens after brain injury, is that everybody is choosing another fork in the road. But, you know, when you think about it, we're all choosing forks in the road all the time, no matter what it is. But it's some, you know, with the brain injury, sometimes they become more difficult to make that choice. But so, Karina, good and happy anniversary. I'm so happy to hear that. You know, did you celebrate the cake or anything? Did you?
Well, I was able to go and participate in a stroke reunion and in one of the organizations in Florida. So it was a great opportunity to see other people in person. So I agree with Deb when she mentioned that it is a second chance of making things better, like better than before. So it is, some people call it new normal. If we stop for a second and think about our life, how our life, you know, if everything was like the way it used to be, maybe what could be that normal? Maybe that is, you know, other, if we go beyond other, maybe things could happen that are not good for our life, or, you know, so it is so incredible. But one of the things I want to point out is the opportunity that we have nowadays to make things better than before.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree. I remember when I first realized that this is my opportunity to rebuild myself in a way that was better. And I saw that as, in some sense, I saw the brain injury as a gift in many ways because of that, because how many people get that chance? Mm-hmm. And you really have to rebuild from maybe not nothing, but from not much. And just from the point of view of, for instance, one of the classic things, one thing that happens with a lot of brain injury survivors is they have problems processing sensory overload or sensory input, and that can be really horrific. I mean, I know I had a lot of trouble with it. I mean, basically causes, you know, you become overwhelmed by. If there's too much sensory input, you become overwhelmed. You can't catalog it, and it all comes in with everything comes in at once, and there's huge traffic jams in your neural pathways. So there was that side of it, but the other side of that is that because all the sensory data comes in at equal value, you notice things that you wouldn't have noticed in a previous life, like, and you appreciate the beauty in a dewdrop on a petal, on a flower petal, things like that you may have glossed over in a previous life.
Mm-hmm.
So at some level, you don't want to deal with so much sensory overload, but on the other hand, it brings out beauty that you may not have been aware of before. So there's a, you know, mm-hmm. I talk about the bloody brain. I refer to my brain injury as the bloody brain. And I think of it in terms of the bloody brain giveth, the bloody brain taketh away. So I see my I feel like the gains I got from the bloody brain are by far outnumber the losses. So there's and a lot of that is by allowing yourself to appreciate the gains and to it help it and allowing yourself to not be defined by the injury, but you mm-hmm. the gains.
Right.
Well, actually, the injury gives you the opportunity to make yourself in a better mold.
I think that's interesting, Deb, what you're saying, because I think after a brain injury, so many people slow down. That's one of the things I think that's caused
yeah.
that makes people appreciate more because of the injury impacts you in so many impacts folks in so many ways, whether it be you know, a neurological, whether it be cognitive, whether it be physical. But in each of those, there's a issue of having to overcome some kind of obstruction, and so
mm-hmm.
I think. For my husband David, because of his balance challenge, he goes, everything's much slower in his life, you know, and
yeah.
he has to plan things out. He has to plan everything out. He has to know what's happening. He can't just run with the flow right away because it's just too hard for him at this point. And so I think at that point you begin to see things differently.
Yeah.
And like you said, even just noticing that dew on a flower or on a blade of grass, it's something that, you know, in our hustle-bustle lives from running here to there, we don't always stop and notice. They always say,
yeah.
stop and smell the roses, you know, but people don't do that stop very much. When I take my pup out, she always stops and smells the rosemary. And I think that's always fun. So I'm reminded of stop and smell the roses every day because she will stop and smell the rosemary. Day.
Well,
so
in general, you have to, I mean, any brain injury survivor has to deal with fatigue at some level. Our brains are working harder. And
yes.
that brings on a lot of fatigue. And you have to slow down. There's no choice.
Yeah.
And as you said, that allows you to smell the roses. It really does.
Right.
It's a, to me,
yeah.
in many ways, as I said, I think of the bloody brain as a gift. I didn't always feel that way.
Yeah. But some people, I've heard that from a lot of people, and it's so uncanny to hear it. It always throws me off, like, what do you mean? How can this be a gift? And David will say something to, and David's got a lot of physical disabilities, which impair him and impede him from doing a lot of fun things, a lot of things that he would have normally done. But yet he says to me, you know, I wouldn't be living here out in the desert if I didn't have the brain injury.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have retired from my job if I didn't
yeah.
have the brain injury, because he would have, scientists work until they're 90, you know? And so I would have been a prisoner, instead of a prisoner without bars over here in Arizona, that's the title of my book, I would have been a prisoner right outside of New York City, a prisoner of New Jersey. Now, how bad is that? Sorry, New Jersey.
No, that is
bad. I love
it
dearly anyhow. No, I love it. I like New Jersey. But I'm just saying, you know, so that affected, his brain injury directly affected our lives as to where we're living. So I was telling you earlier, it's 112 out here today. You know, I could have been back in Jersey and being cold, but I'm so happy to be here in 112. You know, that's kind of crazy, but nonetheless, it's good. So so that's fun. You know, it's interesting to know that. And I've had so many people say that they are much happier after their brain injury. They like themselves better. That's
mm-hmm.
weird. Now, Karina, your brain injury happened when you were so young that I'm not sure you even had a chance to identify who you were at that point. So How did you do this? It seems like you just probably grew into your brain injury. Does that make any sense?
Yes, totally. And it's very interesting. One thing before jumping into the question, it has been very interesting meeting and working with survivors. How we now are admiring nature in so different ways. That is very, it's something to point out how well living right, we all come, if we go back, we come from nature and all those things, but how survivors nowadays are very interested and taking advantage about, you know, nature, admiring nature.
Mm-hmm.
And on my case, it has been very interesting because although people point that so many times, you are young, but at least you are young, you have this at this age. As we share, I believe, in our last, in the last time we were together, that stroke or TBI doesn't have, like nowadays, it doesn't have age for us to experience such events. But pretty much everything is a journey. Back then, I remember that I had my goals. My goal was to go to the army. My career was in the medical field. I wanted to become a paramedic and, you know, continue there, going to the army. And I have all my life planned, pretty much. But guess what?
Mm-hmm.
Everything changed,
yeah.
Right? From 100-degree change. And pretty much it was an opportunity to move here to, Puerto Rico is part of U.S., but to move to Florida and keep exploring other careers throughout my journey, including going to my bachelor's. I was able to keep, you know, with the recovery, keep with all the responsibilities as well as a young individual and exploring different careers. The funny part was I wanted to pursue the human resources career, and guess what? Our mm-hmm. journey, our community, our life, everything happens for a reason. I know that for some people it's like we get angry because we want things in our way, but everything in this world happens at the right time and for a reason. And that is the gift of everything as well in this life, that we plan for something, but if that doesn't come the way we want it, it has a reason. Maybe we are going to meet with another person as we have the opportunity now seeing, right, or connecting mm-hmm. with Donna, with other people. We are connecting with those people with a reason. Maybe I go to the market a third time hour and I planned to go at 2 maybe and I was able to go at mm-hmm. 4. The reason that someone, we are going to meet at someone at the right time, at the right moment, so they learn from us or we connect with them or we help others in so many ways. Makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. And, you know, it's interesting. We were talking before the show about had you not had a stroke, Karina, had Deb not had a brain injury, had my husband David not had a brain injury, we would not be sitting here right now having this conversation.
Right.
Because all of those things had to align in order for us to meet each other. And, by doing so, we're able to help other people. At least I hope we
yeah.
are. We're hope
yeah.
you know, we're able to give them information or give them thoughts, you know, that they may not have gotten from anyone else. Maybe, you know, they're totally isolated, especially in this world, and especially after we just came through COVID for 2 years, people were really mm-hmm. isolated. And but with, you know, with people, with the kinds of things that we're doing here, with the show, with books, with Facebook, social media, any kind of social media, we're able to get together and talk. And that is so refreshing. And it just gives you this I'm not alone feeling, you know, because
yeah.
so many of us feel that we are alone. And when David
had his brain injury in 2005, not a whole lot was known about brain injury. It was well before the NFL news came out about the players, the football players, having brain injury and CTE after they die of chronic traumatic encephalopathy. I can never say that word. Encephalopathy. I actually have it out on a paper here so that I can pronounce it. But did I bother to look? Because, no, I was confident I could say it, but I didn't. So let's see. I'm going to look at my paper. Yeah, here it is. Chronic traumatic encephalopathy. Yeah, good. I did it. But anyhow, yeah, so what was I saying? Holy moly. Before that, so David had his brain injury before all of those things, before brain injury came on the scene, so to speak, before people started hearing about brain injury, before the wars, the Iraq and Iranian wars, those are the things. When those troops were coming back from the war with IED explosions, being a recipient of an IED explosion and causing brain injury, it became news. It was on every mm-hmm. night. It was a headline for weeks and weeks and maybe more than that. And people started to hear brain injury. Like, what's that? What is brain injury? Yeah, I've heard of concussion. And I think most of us have heard of concussion. And most of us have heard that, oh, concussion, you get your stars, you know, you get the stars knocked out of you, or you see stars or something like that. And you get the wind knocked out of you and you see stars. I got it. Okay, so, but they don't ever think that it's that important. You know, the doctor says, okay, just go home, you're going to be fine. But, you know, the lasting effects from a concussion can be devastating, and it's technically a concussion is a brain injury. You know, so
yeah.
I think people didn't know about that. So now they do. And then around that same time, it wasn't then, around 2014, when I think Facebook became alive, I'm sure. I'm not sure about the dates, but it was around then that I became introduced to Facebook, so that's when it came alive to me. And then I found all these brain injury sites on Facebook. I'm like, holy moly, surviving traumatic brain injury, caregivers of brain injury survivors. I mean, I'm just naming off a bunch of things that they're not necessarily real groups. But all you have to do is put in brain injury into Facebook, and you'll get, I was on 30-some groups for a while. So there are a lot of people interested in this topic, a lot of people looking for help and looking for answers. And so I think that is that has been a real help. And frankly, what I was going towards here is the community. Without those social media communities, I wouldn't have met Karina. I wouldn't have met Deb. I would have never known them, you know. But
yeah.
Because of that, you develop empathy for people that have the brain injury. You learn more about it. And like Deb said, you become friends. You know, Deb and I are writing a book together right now. We're almost finished with the first draft. That wouldn't have happened. I mean, holy moly, that was like she had written a book and I had written a book. And then Deb got this good idea, said, Donna, what do you think? Why don't we write one together? And I thought, perfect. So we're doing a book about a caregiver's lens and a survivor's lens of brain injury. And I think it's going to be really good, if I say so myself. Anyhow, so that's how people get together. And that's how I got all my panelists for the show. Is because I learned about something that they said on Facebook, and I said, ooh, that sounds interesting. Let's see if I can get their story. Let's see if they want to share with the world, because sharing our stories with each other is the connection that we have.
Yeah. And I've also found that, certainly new friendships, and they're deeper friendships. This is something I used to be very, very shy. And since the brain injury, I'm definitely not shy anymore. But But also, what was I going to say? Oh, I forget. It'll come back to me at some point, or not.
Or not, I know, or not. That's one of the things with brain injury, though. That happens to a lot of people with brain injury. The memory loss, usually it's a short-term memory loss, and you just lose your track of thought. You know, and everybody says, oh, well, yeah, I do that, too. Like, where did I put my keys? You know, and yeah, we all do that. We do. But it isn't as persistent and prevalent as it is with people that have damage in that area of their brain where things just go away. You know, it's kind of like just lift up into the air and float off. Yeah. So maybe it'll come back to you.
The one thing that happened was, I mean, Aaron Avila, he's a stroke survivor.
Yeah.
From the West Coast, I think. I think he's in California.
Yes, he is. He's California. Yes, he is.
So he interviewed me, and he's a really, really nice guy. And a few weeks later, he just contacted me, and I thought it was about the interview, so I didn't think much of it. And he contacted me via Facebook, and he just wanted to see how I was doing. We did a video chat thing. It was really nice. It's really built up a really, really nice community for me.
Yeah, and you find people that are really sincere about everything, you know, because they're doing serious stuff here. I know David and I were both interviewed by Aaron, and he's just a sweetheart. I really like him. I think he was on my show, too, at one point, too. So, yeah, you can check that out if you're out there listening and want to hear more about what Aaron does, or check him out. Just go to him, you know, look up his name, AaronAvila. And he had a stroke some time ago. He was a very accomplished man at one point, and he had the stroke and was kind of reduced to he had a lot of issues to overcome, let's put it that way. But he's out here he's doing kind of like what we are doing here. He interviews caregivers or brain injury survivors to get their stories out there and to make the world aware that this is happening, and it's a big thing. Wouldn't they say the number was 5 million? 5 million people are living with brain injury. That's a lot of people. It's a lot of people. And you know, there's a lot of different levels of brain injury too. Like for example, if you looked at Deb, you wouldn't know that she had a brain injury. Now, if you look at David, or if you look at Karina, if you look at Karina just sitting there smiling sweetly, you wouldn't know, you know. But if you see Karina start to move, you're going to know. David can sit there and he can smile as sweetly as he wants, but you're still going to know. You know, there's apparent issues that you can see that are visible to people, but a lot of people don't have the outside of the, I don't know what I want to say.
The outside signs.
Yeah, the outward signs of brain injury. So a lot of times you don't know that they have a brain injury. Yet, like I said earlier, they might be confused, or they might have memory loss, or their organization skills may be bad, or they might have anger management issues. You know, and all of those things can occur. And that's probably the only way you're going to know that they might have a brain injury. So, Deb, how does it work for you? Because nobody really knows unless you – how does your life work for you when, you know, if nobody really knows that you have a brain injury?
Well, I mean, most of the time –
you do have problems.
Yeah, I mean, if I care about – you know, if I don't want to hurt someone's feelings, I will explain why I can't do something.
Mm-hmm.
This is something I thought about when you were talking about the Bill, I forget his last name, he was supposed to be on the show today. One of the things that is very common, I tend to overbook myself. I'm better about it. Learning to pace yourself is not easy for many of us because we didn't used to need to pace ourselves. And so sometimes I will line up things that at the time they seem like a great idea, but then time comes and I'm going, oh, God, I can't do this. I'm too tired. I've got a headache. And it's not just, it's not the, when I say I have a headache, I'm talking about a headache where you just can't function through it. And so there are times when I have to cancel things at the last minute, or I can't commit to something because I know that there's a decent chance that I won't be able to do it. And that's just part of life now. And if you and some people who don't know me, who don't know my story, I think I actually I think I burnt some bridges there because I was doing I was honest and said I can't do it. And but you know, people who don't who haven't been through it or don't know who aren't directly involved in the brain injury world, brain injury community, they don't really understand. And they say, you know, they might think that I'm giving excuses and things like that. I can't control how they feel about my situation, so I don't worry about it, you know. I used to. I used to worry about it, but I don't anymore. It's, you know, if they don't believe me, there's not much I can do. I know when I was dragon boating, one of the coaches, I used to dragon boat, I forget how long ago, a few years ago, and there were things I couldn't do, like I couldn't help arrange, you know, set up arrange for our team to go to a race. I just couldn't do that. They, between lousy organizational skills, poor short-term memory, many things, I just couldn't do it. It was just too much for me. I get easily overwhelmed, so the idea of doing all those steps of collecting race fee from the members of the team, put that together with collecting the fees, organizing them in a legible way, legible records. I can't even... When the coach asked me to do that, I said, I can't. And she said, why not? And at that point, I was at a stage where I looked as though everything was fine, but I was far from fine. I'm much better now, but back then it was really bad. And she clearly didn't believe me. She started treating me horribly. And that's one of the reasons why I quit dragon boating, because she was just so awful to me because she felt that I was, I was slacking off. But ultimately, okay, so I quit dragon boating. It used to be something I really loved doing. But also I found that with that, it was okay, you know. I was at the point where originally when... Dragon boat community, they were very, very supportive when I was when all this happened, and I really needed that support. I needed the feeling that I was strong and had stamina. And by the time I quit, I realized that I didn't need that part of it anymore. I'd gone past that. I had enough confidence in my ability that I didn't need that validation. So, you know, things, it's not easy, and you do have to deal with people who don't, you know, a lot of people don't believe people with invisible disabilities, and, you know, you just deal with it, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's what a lot of people would complain about with the invisible disabilities, because the people not believing them, thinking that they are making those excuses, like she just doesn't want to go out tonight, or she's just being lazy or whatever, or, you know, that's just, it's an excuse, you know. And I think it's important for people to understand, to hear this often, and to understand why somebody's doing that. I have so many people whose family members don't even get it. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, really? Do you think somebody wants to put themselves in this kind of a position? I don't think so. I really just don't think so. But, you know, when your family says, oh, you're just do it, you know, come out with us anyway, and they don't get why you're going to be, if you go out, you're going to be in bed the whole next day because you've used up every bit of energy, ounce of stamina that you've had. So, yeah.
Well, my mother, she doesn't, my sister has the same, is in the same situation as I am. She also had bleeds. She had brain surgery. And my mother said to me, this was less than a year ago, she said to me how my sister isn't, she's good at avoiding doing things for them. And I said, but Mom, if she can't do it, it's because of her, you know, her bloody brain. And my mother didn't believe me. She was all skeptical.
Yeah.
And part of that is because my mother's got dementia and she probably just doesn't remember about my sister's brain injury. So I mean, that's probably part of it. But I know with me, she often didn't believe that the situation was as bad as I said it was.
Yeah. Well,
I
think you're not alone. Yeah. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
That happens with so many people, you know, that they're saying that. Not even it's like, how can you not know? This person has gone through, you know, 3 brain surgeries and you've seen the person reduced to infantile state and you think that everything's okay? I mean, even for David right now, you know, okay, yeah, he shows a lot of indications that there's a brain injury, but most people, I mean, like family, don't think much of it, I don't think, you know, they think, okay, well, he's getting on, he does what he can do, you know, he's a little slower at doing it and all that, but I don't think they realize the difficulty, the immensity of every single thing that he has to do. He makes his life look easy, but it's not. You know, it's not easy. Karina, what about you? Now, because I know that you struggle with walking somewhat, because that was one of the pictures I saw of you going across your yard doing a sidestep, and I was like, oh my gosh, this girl is amazing. Because you just didn't give up. You just keep working at it. And that was a relatively recent video, I think. So how do you feel about people understanding your situation?
Great question. It's a great question to explore. Well, on my case, I have, you know, people see me now doing those things, and they believe that, you know, that is it. They mean, but everything starts from zero. So basically, I used to move my left side with my right side. I remember getting up and down in the two-story house, sitting. So with my right hand and leg until a little bit able to keep up, to recover. But basically, one thing that at first, right, it's always hard for us sometimes to understand, but one thing that comes to my mind while I was speaking there, and it's this fact that one thing that helped me is that we are all different. All different and more when I came here to Florida and being able to communicate or connect with different people from different cultures. As well, being able to think, hey, they are different. And if we go a little bit deep, one thing that has helped me a lot is seeing that we all human beings see the things that we are able to see in that glance. So for that, for all of us, it's different. It's like if we put a camera in our head and just start watching that from that angle, it's going to be different, the things you are going to see in the different angle. If you put the camera maybe in your hips and you are you start walking the different scenarios, the different pictures. So the same visual aspect with the different people. Some people see my back. I am not my back. So I don't have that picture, that background, that experience. So I have, you know, what is on my head, what is in front of me. And for we keep it like that is for other people. So for all survivors, we have this glance of experiencing, of feeling, right? And the other people only see us going through all that. So they are two different points of views. So may aware that we are all different. They are two different points of view. We share both, and sometimes we agree with, and others we not. But that is the thing. Don't let the circumstances or other people define you or your recovery or your, you know, the how you want to feel. But instead, make your own, and you know, be able to never give up and keep, you know, your desire alive. Pursue independence or pursue your recovery, and keep working towards your objective, if that makes sense.
Yeah. You do have to keep your eyes up and see that, which, you know, push yourself forward like that too. But you're right. There are all kinds of different views. There's if you're looking at it from the point of the view of a survivor, you might be looking for at the point of view of an employer, or a parent or spouse. You know, everybody's got the different points of view. Karina, did you have a lot of support when you had your stroke?
I had at the beginning. I remember my friends, and they are. I say that in my case, I had too much at one point until I had. I was the one who said, okay, stop, I can do it alone. You know, it was for us, you know, when we see the difference, when at the beginning, like, I was unable to go out. So there was a time where we feel, at one point, we feel alone, right? Because we are new in this journey. And we find ourselves that our time is different than the other people. So at one point in our journey, we feel that, you know, and here is the challenge of, you know, don't feeling like we are different or, you know, from other thoughts that comes around. Yes, at the beginning, we go through feeling alone until having those support around, and also, you know, identify what is good for us as well to keep progressing, to keep moving forward.
Yeah, I think that's really important. You do have to keep an open mind so that you can make those decisions on which way you should go, which is best for you, you know. And not everybody can, you know, and no one can make that decision except the person who's going through it. They know best what it is. And I understand what you're saying, and I know I said this before in a different time, that sometimes people can help too much. Like you said, in the beginning, it was good to have some help. But then as you were getting more adept at your living with your stroke and adapting to your new life with your stroke, you have to make changes in how you do things. But it's good to have people to help you, but you also have to assert yourself. Otherwise, you don't become the strong person that you need to be in order to, get through life with it.
Yeah, and the beauty of the journey and in here in life is that in every corner we meet people who connect with us and help us one way or the other. If it is just by saying a thank you when we need to hear that thank you, for feeling gratitude, or maybe we are having a bad day or a down day and we go out and see that person smiling to us, they are supportive to us, or they are helping us one way or the other. So it is a great opportunity to have of seeing that support. You know, it is all around the world, around the globe. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, another, and I just wanted to say something on that, too. Deb, I'm just going to get this really, really quick.
Yeah, that's fine.
When you're saying that people make you feel better when, you know, by saying thank you or whatever, by acknowledging you or something, I think it's such a little teeny tiny thing that people need to do or should do, and we all should do it. And it has nothing to do with brain injury necessarily. But everybody, if they're just kinder to each other, I make a point every morning when I'm out walking the dog. I wave to every car that goes by. I say hello and smile to every person I pass. A lot of people just will pass you by and ignore you. But I kind of, sort of make them say hi to me, you know, like that. And I think it's just, it makes my day, it makes their day, I think,
because
we so often ignore each other in our lives. That's one of the things I do. But the other thing I think is so important is, somebody held the door open for me the other day. You know, that used to happen a lot when I was much younger, you know, before Women's Lib came around and everything. And people did hold doors for you, and the world is a kinder place sometimes. And that doesn't have anything to do with Women's Lib there. But you know, I remember everybody, you know, any of my boyfriends always opened the door for me. David used to open the door for me all the time before his brain injury. But that obviously is not happening now. I opened the door for him. So tables have turned. But I'm just saying that, you know, I was walking into the store and somebody held the door. It was with David and me, and we were, you know, I'm not saying, I was going to say we were struggling. Well, we're not really struggling. It's just normal. It's just our normal walk, you know, trying to maneuver through doorways and hallways and things like that. And I was just like, thank you so much, you know, and David was thanking them too. We were really letting them know profusely that, it was an honest thank you, but we're also letting them know that their little tiny gesture was so helpful to us, and that we were grateful to them for doing that, and hoping that that will transfer. I mean, obviously they held the door for us, so they had some empathy already. They already know that something, but you know, to let people know that you really appreciate what they do is so helpful, and they'll do it again. They'll do it again for somebody else. Like, I'm hoping all these people that I wave to insanely every morning will wave to somebody else, you know, and just make connections. I think that's really important for people to do. And Deb, I think you have something you wanted to add to that.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I always make a point of, in fact, today I went on a walk with some friends that I know through the brain injury community, and I found myself doing the same thing. Other people were walking their dogs, and I say hello to everyone. And that's one of the nice things about Pittsburgh is people do that. It's part of the atmosphere here. But I was oh, God, now I don't remember what I was going to say, of course.
but you were walking through the neighborhood, and people were saying hello, and you were liking
it. Yeah, no.
You were
not,
saying
was,
hello
was,
to people.
Yeah, no, there's something, I forget. Not important.
It went away already.
Yeah.
Well, I remember when I was visiting Leipzig, Germany, with my daughter when she lived there, and I knew the words Guten Morgen and Guten Tag. And we were out walking and through the park, and I was saying Guten Morgen to everybody that was there. And she goes, Mom, don't do that. People are going to think you're weird. And I said, why? Because I'm saying good morning to them? They should be happy I'm saying good morning to them. I think it's nice to greet people and make connection. But you were also talking too, Deb, about community, and you talked about your walking with some people in your real-life people that you can touch in person walking. I mean, like, yeah, we know each other online, and although you've been out here to the desert to visit and everything, You know, most people I know, like Karina, I know Karina, but I don't know her in person, although I feel like I do. But, you know, so you were talking about that. So you've made community with people in your own area, which is very good.
Yeah. I feel lucky. I really do.
Yeah, that is lucky. We don't have, I actually do have one couple here. I have a couple people, but they live, because, I don't know, we live so, the one couple I don't live far from, but the other one lives way over in Tempe, which is an hour away, and she doesn't drive, and I don't get over there very often, so we don't get to see each other, but I have been with her many times, and we've been out to lunch and dinner and riding cat trikes. David was riding the cat trike, I was watching, but, you know, so, but there's something about it when we meet and you get to see people in person, too, that's really just a nicer connection. Although, I think you mentioned earlier about people meeting online and getting to know them and sometimes having a fast friendship or even a deeper friendship, you mentioned. And, you know, I think it's interesting because you don't get to know the bodily person, but you get to know the mind. I mean, there are a lot of people online that I have no idea what they look like, but I know them. I know their mind.
Yeah.
Because we talk. Well, I might see pictures of them, too. But, I mean, you know their mind, and it is a deeper kind of a connection.
Yeah.
It's not the superficial connection necessarily.
Right.
I think that's what's really good about the communities that we develop, that we are a part of, I should say, online.
Well, one thing that I finally remembered what I wanted to say. One thing that I find interesting is because it's a brain injury, the damage that's caused, there are a lot of parallels between the damage and various other disorders or stages that people go through as they grow. I mean, for instance, babies have issues with there's spasticity there. Well, that is also can be a brain injury thing. When you look at older people with dementia, you know, losing, that's another form of brain injury. Another one where there's a lot of parallels is with people with autism. A lot of them have issues with sensory overload. So that a lot of the stuff that we talk about, there are a lot of people out there who may not think of themselves as having a brain injury, who have that same issue. And they might not be. So what we have to say isn't just for brain injury survivors. It's for anyone who's gone through some sort of a life or death experience, anyone who has some sort of chronic illness, anyone who has who's neuroatypical in some way. I mean, people don't realize that, I think, and that's true amongst brain injury survivors themselves, that how much we have in common with many other people.
Oh, yes. No, that's true.
We connect, I think that from my experience, brain injury survivors connect very easily with other people because, on the face of it, it looks much bigger than what anyone may have, you know, you meet someone, you say, oh, I had brain surgeries, and they, you know, their eyes bug out. But if you talk about some of the things, if you actually start going behind that, looking behind that, there's a lot we have in common with a lot of people who aren't brain injury survivors.
Yeah, no, that's true. And, you know, it's interesting because when I made my website a long time ago, 2014, I called it Surviving Traumatic Brain Injury. I had expected to interview survivors and caregivers of traumatic brain injury. I soon after that found out that, you know, it isn't just traumatic brain injury, it's any brain injury. Now, people talk about stroke, and they talk about, you know, a brain injury that, like somebody getting shot in the head, or falling off of off the curb and hitting their head, or being in a car accident. And that sounds like it's a traumatic brain injury there. In stroke, you know, you had vessels in your, or arteries in your brain clotted, or and the oxygen didn't go through or whatever. And we don't think so much as that was traumatic brain injury. And I realized that brain injury, like you said, Deb, encompasses so many things. And I opened myself up to realizing that, yeah, stroke is a brain injury. MS is a brain injury. Cerebral palsy has something to do with a malfunction in the brain. And that's what's causing it. So we don't call it brain injury. We have these other labels for it. But people are still being affected by many of the same things that we talk about all the time. You know, just the, you know, the surviving of something awful in your life, you know. And so we have to, you know, I do think that people can take a lot away from what we say and apply it to their situation, even though it may not be an actual brain injury.
Well, another interesting one is when I used to ask my students, how many of you have had a brain injury, including concussions? Because a lot of people don't even think of concussions as brain injuries.
Right. I know.
There's such a, I don't know if it's because of stigma attached to it, but people just don't realize what brain injury really means, how much it encompasses.
Yeah. I know, I think they don't. Well, that's what I say in the beginning. I never really realized about brain injury. I mean, it hasn't just come on the scene. It didn't come on the scene when the football players, when they started announcing it on the news, or the troops coming back from the wars. It didn't just all of a sudden appear. Brain injury has been going on forever. For any time a caveman got bonked on the head with a club, he also probably could, you know, have a brain injury. So, I mean, it's been going on, but people didn't know much about it. And I think it's interesting because I always like to liken this to cancer. When cancer first came on the scene, now again, that didn't just come on the scene, but in the 50s it was made more, it was put out in front of people. People talked about it more. They, you know, I think it was Betty Ford who started a foundation of, or was it, who was it? I can't remember now. Maybe it wasn't Betty Ford. It was somebody else. But anyhow, they started a foundation for cancer research or something. And people started talking about cancer. Scientists started researching cancer. People started becoming very comfortable with that word and knowing about it and knowing and learning more and more about the various different cancers that can happen. And it was prevalent. It was so prevalent. But nobody knew that much before that because nobody talked about it. It was hush, hush, you had cancer. You know, that was awful. And so now, you know, what is it now, about 30 years later, I said 50s. So 50s, about 50, 60 years later, we're talking about brain injury in the same way. And as the years have gone by since 2005 when David had his, we're talking 17 years already, for Pete's sake. That's a long time. And people are talking about it more. There is more knowledge out there. If you go to the website, you'll see tons and tons and tons of stuff about brain injury. And fortunately, we have the web. Before that, we didn't have the web to get us connected with the information or with other people that could give you information or talk about it. So I think we're just having at the tip of the iceberg right now on brain injury.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll get more and more research done on it, more information, and more people will understand it, and people can take precautions before they have a brain injury.
But even then, like you said, brain injury doesn't discriminate. There are no guarantees.
Nope.
You can
there
get in
no
the
guarantees.
Tub one day and slip, and, you know, there's just anything can cause a brain injury. And it happens.
Yeah, I know.
And it's sudden.
Yeah. You don't, I mean, you go, don't get to, that's why I think when people hear shows like this, it will help them to, if something happens, they'll have some idea. But usually people don't join this show or listen into the show until it's already happened a little
yeah.
bit late, you know, to get the information. If you have some of this information, you might have something at your fingertips that you can, you know, at least you know that there are Facebook groups out there. You know
yeah.
that there are things on the web that you can look for. When I started this path in 2005, I knew nothing. And I say that in my intro, and I mean it, I knew nothing. And I searched. I didn't have too much time to search in the beginning, but the kids did. And we looked for books. To see, so I wanted to find out that I wasn't alone. I wanted to know
yeah.
who else had a brain injury and what to expect, you know. But then who has time to read on any of that stuff at that point? So that's why I think it's good when people get a hold of our books and get to read accounts of it from real people. Real people
yeah.
are talking about this. It's happened to them. And so, yeah, you're not going to have the same thing happen to you. I can guarantee it. Because it's like a brain injury is like a fingerprint or a snowflake. There are no two exact brain injuries. But you might be able to pick up some knowledge along the way and be able
yeah.
to use it. And with that note, I'm just going to throw out BIAUSA is the Brain Injury Association of America, BIAUSA.org. So if you take anything away from the show tonight, put that in your file. And if you do have a family member have something horrible happen to them like this, at least you'll have some place to go. So on that note, Deb and Karina, we have to shut down. It's already time to shut down.
We've done it again.
Who would have thought? You know, I have to do. I'm laughing because I'll tell the audience because before the show we were saying, what are we going to talk about? It's a free for all. What are we going to say? And Deb's saying, well, Donna, we really should have some guidance. We should have something to say. And I said, Deb, Deb and I sit on the phone for 2 hours once a week and don't stop talking about brain injury. It's not about other stuff, folks. It's mostly about brain injury. I said, I don't think we'll have a problem. And we have Karina
yeah.
in the mix, too. So we have lots to say. And apparently we done did it again. So I
yeah.
like this. Maybe I'll do this more often. This is kind of fun, and it's easier
yeah.
for me.
I mean, the way you started it with us introducing ourselves, that's where it flowed from. So all you have to do, and you know every time it's going to go in a different
uh-huh.
direction because there's so much
yeah.
to say.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's why I wasn't afraid to come on. I actually had never done a show by myself. But I always think, oh, my God, this might have been the day if you guys didn't bail me out today. I could have been sitting here for 90 minutes or 80 minutes, whatever it is, talking to the air and hoping somebody's listening and not, you know, babbling away. But I really enjoyed having both of you join me today. So I have to say thank you to Deb Brandon and to Karina Seda for joining
well,
me
thank
today.
You.
And if you look at the title of the show, it has Megan and Gail on it, but Gail, I said earlier, was at a conference and was going to try to make it, but she texted me and said she couldn't. And Megan had one of those days that we talked about earlier. She had a neural fatigue day. You know, she
yeah.
thought she, earlier on, she thought she could do it. And then by the end of the day, she said, I just can't. And she apologized
yeah.
to everybody for not being here. And I said, Megan, I completely understand. Just feel better. That's all we can do is just try to encourage each other.
Yeah.
So thank you to Karina Seda and to Deb Brandon for being here tonight. And I enjoyed having our chat.
Thank you.
You can read their interviews on my blog, survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. And just type in their names. SEDA for Karina or Karina or Deb, and that'll bring it up. Deb Brandon, BRANDON. And you can also find out more about my book, Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver's Tale, not only on surviving traumatic brain injury, but if you really want the nitty gritty, go right into DonnaFigurski.com. That's my website. While you're there, check out Bookity Blog. Okay, so, as I always say, if you liked my show, tell 10 of your friends. If you hated it, tell 10 of your enemies. That works for me. And stay tuned for the next show that is coming up. Let me grab those notes really fast. I sent it to myself so I would remember because it's a long title. Maybe I won't be giving it to you. Oh, here it is. It's called the Moving Forward Podcast with its stories of triumph with Coach KJ and Dr. Valentina. So stay tuned for them at 7 o'clock coming up shortly. And then tune in next week to Mess with MS with my friend Lisa Dreyer. She's a host for that show. So tune in for that one too. All right, folks. Again, thank you for joining me. Have a really wonderful week, and I will see you in 2 weeks on June 5th, I think it is. It's a Sunday, whatever it is. I'll be here. June 5th, yes, it is. Yay. Okay, so good night, Deb. Good night, Karina, and I'll see you guys on social media.
Thank
Toodles,
you.
Toodles, everybody. Bye-bye.